Well, good day to you. It's Joel with The King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
Welcome to the Havilah Pennington's podcast. Thanks for tuning in. This is Allie from Truth to Table. I'm here to introduce this week's podcast episode. We have a special episode for you today. Havilah had the privilege of having a conversation with Mercy Lokulutu. Mercy lives in Texas with her husband and three incredible children. Mercy is amazing. She has her master's in psychiatry, has a passion to teach and preach, and is building the local church globally with her husband, Marcus. Originally from Nigeria, she has a rich culture, history, and brought us a fresh perspective. She joined Havilah in an exclusive conversation with our Truth Academy members. The conversation was so impactful, we wanted to share it with you all. So, pull up your seat, come and join the very real and raw conversation about racial reconciliation.
Welcome to Truth to Table, Table Talk, Wednesday. Actually, it's Wednesday. And today we're going to have another conversation on the topic of life and connecting with powerful women that have been connections in my world and just really people that I want you to meet. So I know a lot of you guys are jumping on right now, and I love that you're here. There'll be a lot of you that will replay and review, and we love that you're going to do that. If you have any questions or concerns or anything we can do for you, just put it underneath and we'll try to answer everything we know how to do. Today, I'm really excited about having my friend Mercy on our live. And first of all, I just want to say, like, Mercy, thank you for coming and being on this recording. Like, thank you for being here with our class and our community.
Thank you so much for having me. I think this community is so phenomenal, and the ministry that God has blessed you with is just doing so much good for people. Honestly, truly.
We're trying.
Many. Honestly, so thank you so much for having me.
Well, you are amazing. I know I think the first official time we met was in Atlanta.
Yes.
Right? Was that right? Okay. Because I know I had followed you and kind of had seen you at some Propel things, and just we met in Atlanta and watched you preach, and I was like, man, this girl can preach. And just got to know each other. I think I had a urinary tract infection.
You did. That is correct. I diagnosed it in the car on our way to preach. Because that's what we do. We diagnose UTIs and then we preach.
We're women. Yeah. We are women. And I was like, Mercy, here's the deal. Like, I know you're a preacher and you love the Lord, but how's my urinary tract infection? Like, is this a tract infection? You're like, it is. Here's what you want to do. And so we sent somebody to, like, my drugstore to go get me some, like, cranberry pills.
And sure did.
Yeah. Actually never got rid of it that trip. I had it for the next five trips. And finally, I finally went to, like, I think what happened is it wasn't diagnosed. Like, they just took my word for it, but they really needed it to give me a stronger medication. So I just lived with it for months, which was awesome. But I'm like, it's not fun, but it is what it is. And yeah, our female organs have a mind of their own, and they need their own
really
life.
They really do.
So anyway, I'm sure that there'll be men on here. I'm sorry, guys, but this is real life. But anyway, you had diagnosed me, but what I loved about it was that you were in this season where, let's just introduce you first to our community. So tell me a little bit about yourself and tell everybody about, you know, I know you're married, you have kids, you just had a baby. So just tell everybody about yourself.
Yeah, thanks, Hav. So I'm originally from Nigeria. I came to America at 18 for college. I played volleyball at the University of Old Dominion University in Norfolk, Virginia, and that's how I came to the States. I am married. My husband and I have been married for 13 years.
13 years.
I know, it's crazy.
It is, huh?
I've been here for 4 years, which was not fun for me. I was like, let's just get this show on the road. What are we doing? It's been a while. So, he was very from the outset. He was very much pursuing and wanted us to get married. But we were in college. So
was he from the States as well?
Like, he was born in the States, but he's from Congo, which is where my last name comes from. Lokulutu, it's Congolese. We do have three kids. I just had a baby, literally birthed.
I can't believe it.
Weeks ago, in the middle of a pandemic.
Weeks.
No big deal.
But your boys, I mean, your kids are, they're
older.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like junior high.
So I have a 12-year-old. No, I have a 12-year-old going to seventh grade. And then I have a, she's nine. She just turned nine. So nine. I don't have to think about the firm when I was like, wait, what year is it? What year is it? What month
I
is it?
I feel like a horrible parent. I always do that. I'm like, and then I started calling by their numbers. I'm like, well, the nine-year-old, and my husband's like, they have a name.
They have names.
Like, yeah,
and they're neighbors. So your boys have such cute names, honestly.
Well, I thought I was going to have girls. So I did my best.
That's right. Yeah. So I am a nurse by trade. I'm actually graduating as a nurse practitioner in a year.
You were in that process when we were together. You were like, I'm going on. I'm like, you are.
I'm going on. So I'll be a psych mental health nurse practitioner. So that's my area of expertise is psychiatry, mental
health. Really?
Yes. Yes.
Are you diagnosing me right now?
No. No. I have to diagnose myself first. We have to start with ourselves. We look in the mirror.
You do?
Yes. We have to go to therapy for school ourselves.
What?
I know. It was crazy. And there was a lot of stuff. And I was like,
was that appealing to you to like go through?
Once
I'm just curious. Like,
once I got over my pride. So I was like, wait, I'm okay. I'm not crazy.
Once I realized that I wasn't as perfect as I assumed. Yeah.
Right, right. It's actually a really interesting experience. It was. So long story short, how I got into ministry was at Celebration Church. Pastor Stovall and Carrie Weems were my pastor. Yes. I was there for about 14 years. We were there for 14 years.
Jacksonville, Florida.
And they just really, that's where I cut my spiritual teeth. That's where I got my.
I know that.
You didn't know that? Yeah, my spiritual formation. Those are my pastors. I still talk to them. We still text.
That's where we first met. Like my brain is catching up.
Did you preach at Chime?
Yes. But in my head, I didn't remember that until you just said this. And I'm like, because I remember you being like, I'm home. And me thinking like she's home. She must have spoke here before, but you now that
that's home.
That makes so much more sense. Sorry.
Yeah. So really, that's where I was empowered to preach. I was ordained as a pastor there. That was my family. So from there, opportunities just started coming for preaching, honestly, all around the world. And I've always been bivocational. I never gave up nursing. I always did both marketplace and ministry. So that's a little bit about me.
Did you know you were going to have another baby? Were you hoping that you would?
Do you know what? It was one of those, Lord, have your way, but hurry up because I'm almost 40. Right. The desire was there. And I knew there was a window there that was like, okay, God, if this is going to happen, this is probably the window. And honestly, true talk, I know, okay, we're part of a community now, guys. You guys are pulled into my family. So I'm going to be honest with you. I was going to go to my OB to have a conversation about permanent contraception. Yes. And she canceled that appointment because she had to go to a C-section, emergency C-section. And she rescheduled my appointment for a week later. I got pregnant that week.
No, it's crazy. You are kidding.
No. So
that's the Lord.
The Lord? Right, yes.
Yes. Yes. That is hysterical. It's like the guy who has the vasectomy and then misses the second appointment and then ends up getting pregnant. You know, you're like,
it's not. So my son's name is Isaiah. My daughter's name is Ava. My baby's name is Zuri, which is such a cute name. She's a sweetheart.
Is there some specific meaning?
Zuri means beautiful. And there's a Hebrew form that starts with T. It's Tzuri. It's a male form. It means hardworking for the Lord, constant, strong. So I like to think of her as fire and ice. She's both. She's tender, but she's also fierce.
Oh,
she's been that way since utero. She's amazing. truly.
She wanted to be here.
She wanted to be here. She really did. She was like, hey, I got something to say.
Isn't it odd having babies? Like I had mine, my first were in my late 20s and then my other three were in my 30s. And just as I got older, the difference physically.
Yes, physically.
Different. Yeah, it seems like 20-year-old moms that are like,
a whole another level.
I'm like, I am tired. I'm very tired.
Exhausted. Yeah. On the inside, like in my soul.
I used to say bone tired. Like I felt like it was in my bones. Like I was just, you know, I was an old woman. So what I love, Mercy, is our community. And I know you guys are jumping on here and people will come in and out. But make sure that if you want to ask a question or be like connected, make sure you put your name in there because that's how StreamYard works. It just gives you like a Facebook user. It doesn't let you just say your name unless you put it in. And this month we're talking, our whole series is Good Stuff, which is really about longevity, like living in our, like realizing that if we're really going to be here for long term, we've got to do certain things every time, like renew the mind. We've got to speak life. We've got to go after the, you know, the enemy in our lives. All of that was before what's happening in our world. And I don't know about you, but this has been like, I want to say this month has been a woke month. We've all woken up to things that I think we didn't know, or we knew but we didn't admit, or whatever it is. And for me personally, it's been a very, it's been a unique and I almost want to say sober and sovereign season. I feel like it's been, yeah, like I feel like I have just literally every day, I feel like my cup gets filled with information and learning and trying to change mindsets and then turn around the next day and doing it over. Now, I can't even imagine for yourself, like, what has this month been for you? What are things that you're learning? And like, I just want to kind of start that conversation as our community. I think it's really, really important. And it's one of the reasons why I have you here is I want to have the conversation of what's happening in our world.
Yeah. It's been a lot. It's been a lot to process. I think I want to set up for the community to understand that I didn't grow up in this country. Okay. Yeah. So I have a unique perspective, a little more objective, I would say maybe, because I grew up in a country where I was not a minority, right? There's more black people than white people in Nigeria in general. So I have to be reminded when I came to America that I was a minority. It was in my sociology class and she's talking about gentrification and she's like, as a minority, how do you feel? And I didn't answer because I didn't know she was talking to me. I was like, oh, that's me. Oh, okay, got it. I'm on it. You know, so it's sort of been this sobering discovery for me of learning. I had to educate myself. I'll be honest with you, Havila. When I first moved to America, I didn't get it. I didn't understand the African-American community's pain. I felt like probably a lot of your viewers might relate to this. I felt like African-Americans a lot of times would play the race card. Just being honest with you.
Yeah.
I felt like America's a land of opportunity. If you work hard enough, you can pull yourself up by the bootstraps, not knowing or understanding the full historical context that the system was built in such a way that disadvantaged minority populations. And that journey for me took on, it looked like a lot of books. Documentaries. I just educated myself. Yeah. And once I did, what happened, Havila, was I developed empathy that I didn't have before at a different level. So now I could feel how they felt. And then the next layer that happened was I had children. My children are African American in every sense of the word, right?
Yep.
And then on top of that was the lived experience of my husband getting pulled over and having to be on camera with me because he was afraid, you know, things like that. Right. So what has this month been like for me? It's been a lot of tears. Okay. It's been a lot of conversations, a lot of anger, but a lot of sadness as well. It's not anger at any particular person. It's anger at sin. It's the result of sin, right? God's plan initially was not, this was not his initial intent, right?
Nope.
The garden, he did not, this was never part of the plan. So, but I think honestly, if I'm honest with you, I'm ending up with hope. I'm seeing this generation and their drive and passion for authenticity and for not harboring what other generations have tolerated.
Right.
And they are just, oh man, the church is marching on, huh? And the
people
are not going to prevail.
You know? I know. Did you feel like it was a conversation that you, like, did you, and this is like, you know, I want to ask the right questions, but do you, you know, when everything was happening, did it feel like we already are aware of this narrative? This is already something we deal with. Now the world's waking up to this. Or did it feel like actually we've been at peace, even though we don't like it, we've been at peace with it, but now it's stirring it up. Like what did you experience?
That's a good question. I think because of my background in psychiatry, I can understand that what the African-American community has been enduring for 400 years is trauma, right?
Yeah.
So it's been a traumatic experience watching people who look like you be murdered and lynched and raped and pillaged and systemically disadvantaged from getting a loan and getting a small business and schools. Yeah. And I mean, you can go down this list, this litany list of systems that have been set up in such a way that disadvantage you. And so every time one of these things happens, it's as if that wound is being ripped open again, and there's further trauma. So you get to turn off the news if you're white and just, okay, that's done. When you're Black, you don't get to do that. It's a lived experience. So I would liken it to just a trauma response, right? So I want people to really understand where some of the anger for the Black community is coming from, especially in the church, because it feels like we're united in every other way except for this issue. This is the lightning rod that then everybody takes. We bind to these false dichotomies, right? You have to be either for this or that.
Yep.
But in reality, you don't have to be for or this or that. You can be plus and. I'm for this and I'm for that.
That's right.
Right? You don't have to buy into that false dichotomy. You know, so I think we have to be careful that the enemy, whose goal has always been to divide, to steal, to destroy, doesn't come in to divide us further. There's already been pain here. Because if I'm honest with you, as a woman of color who's in predominantly white circles and churches and ministry, what it feels like is our white brothers and sisters are willing to rejoice with us, and we raise our hands together in church and we preach on the same platforms. But when it comes to this issue, I don't know that Black communities feel like their white brothers and sisters are willing to suffer with them.
That's right. It's true.
It's an invitation, right? To rejoice in the fellowship of his suffering. But it feels like when we open up and say, you know what, this hurts. I'm traumatized.
Yep.
It's sometimes trivialized, right?
Yep.
It can be seen as, well, if I say my life matters, I'm not saying I'm asking for special privileges. I'm asking you to just say, it matters.
It matters.
And you come back and say, well, all do. Yes, but I'm hurting right now.
Right.
There's a one part of the body that's in pain and it's hemorrhaging. If my body's hemorrhaging, my entire immune system, blood system will rush to that site to stop the pain.
Yeah.
So I think if I can help people understand a little bit, if a woman is rescued from human trafficking, has just experienced this trauma, and she's telling you her story, Havila, you would never tell this woman, well, other people are suffering too.
Totally. It's true. We wouldn't.
Well, it's not that bad. It happened 400 years. It happened 40 years ago. It happened 4 years ago. Get over it. Yeah. Are we still talking about this? You would never say that because she's traumatized. Furthermore, if she sees someone who looks like her abuser and lashes out or hits him or punches a hole in a wall.
Yep.
If you have not shared in her suffering, how dare you judge the amount and degree of her pain?
That's right.
Outrage. Because that's right. You know what I mean? So
I do.
I'm not going to sit here and tell you that all of the reactions have been good. They haven't. But when people are traumatized, they do things they normally wouldn't do.
That's right.
Right.
And what's interesting, Mercy, is it's been really insightful. Like, I did a post, you know, a couple months ago when the gentleman in Atlanta had been shot by the guy when he was out for a run. And I had gotten and I'd gotten a little bit of, you know, pushback. And then I had posted again about George Floyd and lost hundreds and hundreds of people that just unfollowed. And I was shocked. Like, I legitimately was shocked. Like, wait, I'm sorry, I don't understand it. And just DMs of anger. And I was shocked. And I was like, wait, I don't understand. Why is that even offensive? This doesn't seem offensive. This seems like a human thing, humanity.
Right.
And I'm a mom of four boys. I can't even imagine having my son hurt. And then I think what's happening, you're probably seeing this too, Mercy, like the America is very divided. So parts of America have different stories as well. And I have two of my girlfriends in my core group are from the South. So we have a conversation. I'm California born and raised, very diverse. California is more liberal and a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So initially I'm like, well, I don't know that part of our story. I don't know how you guys could think or act this way or whatever. then they're explaining more. Mm-hmm. But then I began to see, and I'm just being forthright, and I've told my community this, I began to see the way that I had been raised, there was racism in my heart. Not that I thought I was a racist or hurting somebody, but I saw the system and I saw the education and I saw the narratives of TV and music. And so I saw this part of the narrative that I was not aware of until it started to be challenged. And then I thought, it's true. And I know this offensive, and some of our viewers will just not follow, and they can go find whatever, whoever they need to follow that supports what they believe. But mm-hmm. I feel like it doesn't work when you're saying, let's do it peacefully, but you're not changing. So then what are right. we supposed to do? Like, right. what are we supposed to do? So you're gonna build your business, build your community, build your family, say, well, do it peaceful, go over there and do it peacefully, and we'll listen to you when we need to. The only way to get your attention, and my kids would do this exact, this is normal. When we're in pain, the voice of pain says, do whatever you need to do to make it stop. Right. And they're saying, we need to be heard, and we don't know how to get your attention. And as a middle American white woman, I don't think we would listen. I really don't, unless there was some kind of forceful moment that wakes us up that says, we are not okay, and we are not going to be okay until this changes, and we are in pain. Just between us, I'm like, I love you guys, but that's not what's happening here. And I don't know how I guess I just would say, it's like somebody who's over here, I'm catching up. And I right. think that it's very important to, like you said, the starting with empathy. This is someone's mm-hmm. child. This is your mm-hmm. child. This is your husband. This is your, these are our kids. This is our husbands. These are, and if we don't have that filter of this is someone's child, then we basically marginalize and compartmentalize Absolutely. It as it's them.
Absolutely.
And I can't, the moment you realize there's someone's child and it's someone's husband, and
right.
I'm sorry, I know I'm not very clear because I feel there's a lot of emotion behind it.
There is.
And,
there is. And rightfully yeah. so. Yeah. What you're describing, Havilah, is called humanization, because what's happened is that Black people for 400 years, starting from the slavery to the Jim Crow era and everything else, have been dehumanized, right?
That's right.
It was written into law that slaves were 3/5 of a person. Mm. It's been written into law that Black men especially were characterized as apes and monkeys, because that's what you have to do in order to justify cruelty. You have to dehumanize
that's
that
right.
person, right? Whether it's the Nazi era with the Jews
right.
or the Rwanda genocide with Hutus, they call them cockroaches, right?
Because yeah, they did.
A cockroach. I would never kill a human. So
that's right.
Black people, whether it's through social media, I mean, through media or any, we've been dehumanized for years. So it's built in it's very implicit, right? It's not overt racism that's dangerous. It's the implicit biases. And bias is bias. We all have biases. I have bias. I have some
right.
privilege, right? Growing up in Nigeria, I grew up with a lot of resources.
Yeah.
My family's not poor by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah.
So, the poverty mindset is something that I don't necessarily have as a filter because I didn't grow up that way. But what empathy does, it allows you extend beyond yourself, and it is messy and it is uncomfortable. And you have to do a lot of, like you said, sober reflection.
Yeah.
I heard Pastor Bishop T.D. Jakes say this the other day. And I thought it was so impactful. He said, when reasonable people stay quiet, unreasonable people take over. And that is true. That's what we're seeing right now. And I really appreciate your honesty, Hav, to just say, you know what? I don't think I really would have listened or understood the scope and the depth and the ire with which the Black community right now is dealing out of. This is a trauma response. What it requires is empathy and trauma-informed care. That's just a fancy way of saying be kind.
Be kind. Right? And be patient.
And be patient. And it's not going to look like what you would like it to look like, but you don't determine the narrative when it's not your lived experience.
That's right. That's right.
You cannot dictate how someone exposes and expresses their pain, especially if you haven't shared in their suffering.
That's right.
You haven't sat with them and had a conversation with someone who doesn't look like you and just said,
that's right.
Tell me about your experience. If someone asked me that, Havilah, do you know what I would tell them about the heartbreak it is for me to sit down with my 12-year-old, who is 5'6" and looks like he's probably 15 or 16. And knowing that I have to have a conversation with him about how to present himself to the world in a system, especially a police system that has weaponized his skin color so he can never be disarmed. He's always a threat. I don't know when he goes from cute to threat, but at some point that happens for my child, and I had to sit down and have that conversation. And it was heartbreaking because now his innocence has been eroded ever so slightly, in his trust in the world and his viewpoint and his lens and his worldview. And of course we're Christians, and of course he knows who he is in Christ. But as a parent, we have to prepare him for the real world.
Yeah.
And as much as I would like to say it, a generation was raised up in a time where Black people were treated as chattel, a slave. So mentality generationally, it's toxic thinking that you're passing down from generation to generation. And Romans 12, 1 to 2 says we can transform our minds, but only if you're willing.
Yeah.
Only if you're willing to learn. Havilah, only if you're willing to listen. Listening is the first spot. Just have a private conversation before you post publicly about any of this.
Yeah, good point.
That's what I would challenge your community to do.
That's really good.
If you want to really understand this, have a conversation with somebody who does not look like you, who did not grow up in the area of town that you grew up in, that hopefully you have some type of relationship with that can handle the weight of truth. You know what I mean? Love builds that bridge that can handle the weight. Have that conversation privately before you ever post. Before you ever post anything that says, you know, if you comply, the police officers will leave you alone. That is not true for an entire community. As much as I would love to think it is, it's just not.
Yep.
You know, before you post All Lives Matter, just think about the way Jesus lived. When he left 99 for one, was he saying 99 lives did not matter? No. He was saying this one's in trouble. This is the one that needs me right now. The marginalized, the ones that are castigated, the ones that are set apart from the rest of society, right?
Yeah.
The woman at the well in Samaria, the Bible says he had to go through. She just didn't have to do anything. He chose to go through that city to talk with this woman, to invite her into a conversation, a private conversation. He sent the disciples away so he could have a private conversation with this woman who did not look like him, who was marginalized and castigated and socially inept. And that's what I'm asking people to do. If I can say anything, it's just have a private conversation before you ever post.
I love that.
You know, it changes things because it humanizes it. It's no longer they. It's now us. If you have a child and you imagine having to talk to your son about this, it is heartbreaking. It's hard. I wept. Oh my gosh. You know, I remember a time we were playing the backyard frisbees, and our frisbee went over to our neighbor's yard. Our neighbors are phenomenal. We know them all. But my son, without even thinking, just jumped over the fence to go grab it in my neighbor's yard. And my husband was livid.
He
was so scared that the optics of a Black child jumping a fence in Texas with someone who did not recognize him might lead to my son losing his life
and death.
Oh my gosh. I just thought, is this what we've come down to? You know, this is Sarah Jakes Roberts said it so beautifully. She said, we're fighting for an America we have not seen yet.
Yeah. That's right.
It's humbling. It's troubling. It's all of the emotions that I think anyone would feel in my situation. Just imagine, if you can for a moment, what that felt like to think my son's life is danger being a kid. He's just being a kid. You know, you have boys. Mm-hmm. You know how boys deal with
things.
They don't even think. The frontal lobe is not well developed yet.
They don't.
They just do what they do. And for my son on that day, it was a matter of life and death. Not just going to get his frisbee. And I just thought, God, have mercy on us. Have mercy on us. You know,
even one of my friends, she said she had a teacher's son that he wasn't allowed to be angry in public.
Right. Because
he had to be peaceful and happy. He wasn't allowed to show any emotion of anger.
Right. And we've had to do that for a long time, right? Black people, we've had to sort of edit ourselves, compose ourselves in such a way that we're palatable to a white community. Because of the caricatures and the stereotypes. And, you know, I do have to say one thing that's helped me a lot with this is using nonlinear theology. Like, instead of looking back on my past to try to unravel it, I think of a preferred future. And that's what I'd love for the church to do at this time.
It's good, you know, Mercy.
This nonlinear thinking is really important because it doesn't look back to try to untangle the past as a way of moving forward. You can start there, but that's not where you end. By looking at a preferred future. Because Jesus even did that, right? What did he say in 1 Corinthians 2:9? No eye has seen. He's setting up this picture of this preferred future we're going to have in heaven and saying, let that be your goal.
Wow.
And let that be the impetus for change. So in as much as we do have to look at our past to move forward, we can't deny it. 400 years or so. We're only three generations away from owning other humans, Avalon.
I know.
Like, it's not that long ago.
It's not long ago. It's really not.
It's really not.
No.
So I guess the question I want people to ask themselves as they start to embrace this and understand and deal with the guilt and the shame, and no one should feel guilty for how they were born. Nobody should feel that way.
That
guilt is not an action step. Shame is not helpful. What is helpful is asking yourself, what should this look like? And working from that. So it's a future focused.
That's excellent.
State, right? It's not only looking at the past. The past is important because you need to understand that. When I understood Jim Crow era, when I understood Brown versus the Board of Education, when I understood what happened to Emmett Till, oh my gosh. It gave me so much empathy, but then also gave me this desire for, okay, we can make this better. We've been given a gift of this time and space in history to write a better chapter. Like, my son should not have to have that conversation that I had with him, with his son.
Yeah.
That's the goal. So it's future focused. Okay, I see where God is taking us. Revelations 21:4, there's going to be a time when there'll be no tears and no death. And no, that's the future that we're looking towards.
I love that.
That's what I'm working towards. So that's the only way I can have hope, have a lot.
If
we sit here and eat Ben and Jerry's and we're all depressed.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
What's my other option? If I keep reading the news, if I keep buying into these narratives, right? I think how the church has been complicit is that we've played the game the world has been playing, right?
Yeah.
We've brought politics into the church.
We have.
Said if you don't vote for this president or vote for this party or think this way, then you're not a Christian.
That's right.
That is not true.
No.
The Bible says anyone who believes in him is saved. It doesn't say anyone who believes in him and votes for this president. Anyone who believes in him and feels this way about this topic. Like, what, when did that happen?
Yeah.
And this is something I've watched in my years in America, increasingly so, of politics.
You have?
The church. Yes. Which is why I think a lot of white pastors don't want to speak about this because they think that when they say something, they're making a political statement.
Interesting.
In reality, it's not a political statement to say Black Lives Matter. That's a human rights issue.
Right. Right.
That's a human rights issue.
Right.
A sidewalk should not become a courtroom for a man of color in any community in America.
Right.
I cannot breathe is not a political statement. It is a human rights issue.
It's a human rights state. That's right. That's right.
Right?
That's right.
I don't understand what is controversial, to be honest. I don't understand.
I don't either.
I'm trying to grapple to understand the...
I know.
You know?
Why all of a sudden is that really the point? The point is that we saw something that was horrific.
Horrific.
Just not on a full generational, but that we were allowed to sit and watch that as if that was... And no one could step in. No one said, this is not like, people are screaming, please stop. But there was a coldness. It was something you could feel the disconnect. Yes.
You could sense it. Yeah.
Yeah. You could sense. Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's like, yeah, okay. They were doing their job. And then just on a human rights level, what we just watched, if they had done it to anybody or anything
So, for the Black community, our question is this what it takes to pierce our collective consciousness? Yet another brown body without life, whether it's a neck, a knee on a neck,
right,
or a noose around a neck, it's the same thing.
It's the same thing.
And it's traumatizing. That's what people need to understand. This is
trauma. And I think that's what I don't think we understand. I'm just being honest. I think when you guys said, or and I've heard you this there, I'm like, when you say it brought up trauma in us,
yeah.
That was not the filter that we were seeing it initially. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense, Mercy?
Yes,
like when you say, when they look like me and they're hurting me and they're hurting my child, I wasn't having that initial until empathy, until I began to put myself in the shoes and realize this is what it would look like if that man on the floor looked like my brown-eyed, you know, skinny little son Judah on the floor.
Yeah.
If I saw that as my son, I would have a different internal reaction.
Absolutely.
Does that make sense?
Would you not want to burn everything down for your child? Let it burn. Right? Because that's your baby.
I wouldn't care. I wouldn't care who it affected. I would be saying, this is wrong.
You know what I felt? I have not watched the video, and I don't think I will, because I just feel it's just too much.
Yeah.
I do remember reading that he called for his mama.
He did.
I thought, oh my gosh.
At the end of it. And she had passed away.
How does that not summon every mother on the earth to say, enough?
Enough.
This is enough. We are well equipped by God as the church to step in and say, you know what? We can't look for a law to do what only God can do. Let's just start here. Let's have conversation. Let's be really united in our churches. A lot, if I'm honest, Havilah, a lot of white churches in America, predominantly white, want to look diverse, but not be diverse.
Not be diverse. I would agree. I would agree with that.
And what that's done is put in a little bit of division. Some of that coldness that we felt, some of that separateness, otherness, comes from that. It happens in the marketplace and it happens in the church. You know?
It really does.
If my name sounds a certain way, I may not get that job. I may not get that promotion. You know, there's a whole generation of African-American mothers and fathers who named their children white sounding names, quote unquote. That is just unconscionable.
It is.
You know, we have to keep editing who we are, reducing who we are to the lowest common. We're asking for the lowest common denominator. Just matter.
Just matter. We're not asking for anything else. Just care.
And not special rights. Just equal. Like human. Civil. Can we be civil?
I know. But I don't think people see it. I think it's scary. I think they do see it. And it's scary to think about that they see it and that they believe that they're following Christ.
Yeah.
But dehumanizing people, you start actually getting really concerned. Like this is our Christianity and that people aren't concerned.
Right.
Or they're defensive. They're defensive. Yeah. Why are you defensive? It doesn't have anything to do with you and your rights being taken away. It has nothing to do with your freedom. This is somebody else who doesn't have what you had.
Right.
And you're willing to go overseas and help people and you're willing to send money to other people. But the people in your community, you're saying, can we stop talking about it? It's been a week.
It's
uncomfortable. You know? And I'm like, why are we all trying to move on? We all tried to move on before and this is going to come back around.
Right.
People are going to say this isn't working until things change. And I know everyone wants to edit everything. Well, it's not this and it's not this. And we're all caught up on semantics. And what it is it's distracting from the uncomfortable part that it's still there.
Yes. So if hearing Black Lives Matter makes you uncomfortable, ask God why.
Right.
If seeing images of something makes you uncomfortable, and I would also tell your community, be very careful and pay attention to what is easily confirmed in your heart.
Okay.
But if you see one statistic, it confirms something in your heart.
Yeah.
Right?
Validate.
When you see, it wasn't only the protesters looting and rioting. There were other people that instigated that were not people of color. When you see that, does it confirm something you feel like, you know what? You are who I thought you were. You're all, you know, when you start to feel that.
That's right.
That's when you investigate it. As David said, search me, oh God.
That's right.
Examine my heart. I have had to do that. Like I said, when I first came to America, I didn't understand it. I was very judgmental towards African Americans. As an African who was very educated and very learned and had access to resources, I had privilege.
Yeah.
And so I was like, if a bus comes to pick you up for school, why on earth would you not get a high school diploma, not understanding. No. There's a whole lot else that goes into that, right? You know, not understanding the business of mass incarceration, which is the new Jim Crow, right?
Yeah.
Of an entire segment of our population that's incarcerated as African Americans that don't get to vote.
They don't.
Ever. Right? Don't get to raise their families. Mm-mm. And then we blame those families. Well, why aren't their fathers? Well, you put them, half of them, in prison.
Right. Yeah, for things that other people are out and running around for free.
Right. Right. So I just have learned to have more empathy. If I can say one thing about my journey in America and understanding what's happening in our country today, is that the Lord has increased my capacity to be empathetic. And he's done that through lived experience, obviously, through raising my children, but also through me educating myself, right? Just the same way as I study the Bible.
When yeah.
I want to know about it's an exercise of diligence, and you got to do the work, you know?
Yeah.
And gosh, this is so important, because I feel like we need to get this right as the church. We are at a flashpoint. Make no mistake about
it.
The excuses that would have worked before cannot work now, because we've all seen the video. We've all seen those still images. When Colin Kaepernick was kneeling, if that offends you more than this cop kneeling on this man's throat for over 8 minutes,
yep.
you have got to check your heart. I'm sorry.
Right.
No,
I agree.
There is no excuse.
There's no excuse. There's really not. And
there's
we
know.
And Our quickness to write it off is what is so concerning. It's what happened with the Holocaust. There was a quickness to them. It's them, you know. There was other European nations that were there that could have done something, and we didn't want to get in there. We didn't want to get involved. And it's that part of us that we think, well, I'm not the solution. You are. The fact you have to speak up, and I don't know. I think there's a lot of shame.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of shame. I think there's a lot of ignorance. I think we're embarrassed. I mean, I feel that way, honestly, Mercy. I get embarrassed because I don't know what to do. And I know it, and I want to help. And then when I go to help, I feel ignorant, and I feel privileged, and it hurts me. And yet I think it makes me uncomfortable because you know, I'm just being honest. Like, I want our community to not us and them, but me and we. Like, it's really important that we humanize our own experience. And I feel like that's something that, and this isn't judgment, but I've just seen a lot of people post, and it's them and we, and there's not a lot of me. And I just don't know if we're going to get there if we don't get into me. I need to take personal responsibility for the things that I have ignored because it was in my favor. Mm-hmm. I need to take first responsibility because I'm saying, well, not all of them are bad. So there was one bad apple. So that's what it was. Versus, no, there's a system that is hurting my brothers and sisters.
That's right.
And there's just, does that make sense? There's just this kind of part of us that's like, well, I can't carry the burden of that. Yes, you can. You are strong. You can carry the burden of your brothers and sisters. This is not too much for you. And there's this kind of weakness in us that's like, well, I couldn't. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm too tired. I'm already dealing with my own stuff. No, you're not. You're not dealing with telling your son that he's not allowed to jump over a fence because it might be life and death. You are dealing with that. So suck it up and get honest that this is a different season and experience for you than what your friend, your brothers and sisters are experiencing. There's just a lack of dick. And I think I've been shocked at maybe my own community and the responses. I'm like, wow, I love you guys. I want to chalk it up as ignorant, because if it's not ignorant, then I'm terrified that it's legit. There's actually you know what you're doing. And that
complicit.
Even scares
you're
me
complicit.
More.
Right.
And that scares me more. And then also, like you said, I can turn the TV off. It doesn't affect my world at this moment.
Yeah,
but it does affect my world. There needs to be an awareness that these are our friends. Like, I was thinking about, you know, both of my boys, my eldest boys, their best friends are Black boys. Like, they're beautiful, but those are their best friends. So they come over to our house all the time, and that's their best friends.
Yeah.
And I guess I just was sitting there, like, they're sitting in my living room, and I'm just thinking about their parents, and I'm thinking about, and this is like so crazy. I'm like, I wonder if their parents feel like they're safe at my home. Mm. I wonder if they feel like when they go out and ride their bikes, if they're worried about my neighbors, if they're worried about that I wouldn't be aware of what they need, I wouldn't know how to help them in this moment. Does that make sense? Like, I'm having this empathy of like, they're trusting me with their precious, precious babies.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to help. I don't know how to steward that. Yeah. In a way, because I haven't been aware. Does that make sense?
It does. And I think that's where the Holy Spirit comes in, because he just comes and he comforts us in our shame and in our lack of awareness, because that does, I really can understand that, because again, that was my experience. Once I realized exactly. I was ashamed and I was like, I'm a Black woman. How did I not know this? This is unconscionable. Like, people look at me and assume I know all this stuff, and I'm like, I'm not legit. I'm not.
I'm as shocked as you are.
And so for me, it's been a very humbling experience, and I had to repent. I had to repent and say, God, I'm sorry for my legalistic attitude and my judgmental attitude.
Yeah,
you know, towards my brothers and sisters, especially now that I have these children who truly.
Yeah,
are African and American, and are seen as such.
They are,
and I just think that's so important. Pavla, you said something really interesting. Of you've now started to think about how those parents felt. That's it. That is the key. That is the glue. That's the good stuff that's going to unite us. That is it right there. Of for a moment, getting outside of our comfort zone, outside of ourselves. And just saying, what does that person feel like, God? What do you think that person's experience has been?
Yeah. That's really good.
Oh my goodness. That, honestly, if we all could do that, that is what would change this narrative. The media would not be able to pit us one against the other. Politics would not be able to pit us one against the other, because there's a shared humanity that overrides all of that. We can pray for prayers as big as kingdom come or small as daily bread. But until we understand what our sisters and brothers are going through, I don't think God really sees us as in the fullness of what we need to be as the church, right? We're missing, just like one gender cannot fully encompass all that
that's
God
right.
is.
That's right.
And one culture cannot fully. So if for leaders who want to put people on the platform and the front lines to look diverse, but not invite them into those sacred spaces of decision-making, all I can tell you is that you're missing out, right? There's a fullness, there's a richness,
there's a fullness,
a texture. It's like broth that's been simmering for a day versus an hour, right?
That's there, right.
There's layers there. There's what God is doing for his entire body.
That's right.
Or one body, many parts. It's that's really right. hard for the many parts to come together as one body. And that's the tension we're in right now, right? We're navigating that tension and that friction of different experiences and different backgrounds and everyone trying to find this common ground. Until we're able to think of what that person is feeling, we won't have that empathy.
And what, Mercy, what is it like in your home with your community? Like, people are tired, they're hurting. Mm-hmm. What is it like? Like, can you give us more awareness of maybe what's helpful, what's not helpful? I know, I just know it's a different experience completely.
Yeah.
So like, what is it, what's it like right now?
I would just honestly say that it's like a lament, right? It's grief and it's mourning, right? So we're, Black community is in mourning. And whenever
you- What does that mean? Like, why are you, this is gonna sound so ignorant, but I wanna make sure we have the right words and we understand.
Absolutely.
What is the mourning? What is the mourning?
So the lament is that we've been honest and open with our white brothers and sisters. And like you, we've been shocked at some of the response. And so you're mourning this loss of, we're mourning obviously the loss of human life. There's that. But I think deeper than that is I've shared with you everything that I am and you've rejected that. I don't want the messy bits. I only want to hang out with you when it's fun and exciting and we're raising hands in worship and we're together that way. I really don't want to sit with you in your pain, right? It's the priest and the Levite seeing that man on the side of the road and being like, you know, if I try to help, I might get your blood on me and your sweat. It's uncomfortable and I don't want to be uncomfortable.
Totally.
So I think for the Black community, part of the grief is if this, watching this man be killed on a sidewalk, watching Ahmaud Arbery be hunted down like an animal,
mm-hmm.
watching Breonna Taylor sleeping in her apartment and being riddled with bullets, if this does not change the tide, the grief is, what is it going to take? If this doesn't bring empathy, what is it going to take?
Does it feel hopeless?
I'll be honest.
Not that you partner with no hope, but does it feel hopeless? At first,
it really kind of did a little bit, because it felt like our collective consciousness has been pierced, but yet we're still getting comments like, this is the mainstream media because it's an election year. Like, are you kidding me? We've just exposed this wound festering for 400 years, this wound. We're telling you that the system is not really necessarily broken. It was built in such a way that would not give us the advantage in life. You know, and the fact that we don't live in a rage 24/7 is by the grace of God, given everything that the Black communities had to go through. You know what
That's
I mean?
Right. So I do.
Given all of that, when we've been open and by the way, have sacrificed, I can speak for myself as a Black woman in a predominantly white church, I sacrificed quite a bit to just fit in and to be a part of the body, because I know that, again, my future focus, non-linear theology is telling me there's a preferred future that I want to see for my children. In order for me to see that, I have to show up. If I want diversity, I have to show up and be there, right? So I've done all of that, and now the invitation of, I'm hurting, will you just come and sit and suffer with me? When that is rejected, girl, it is wound upon wound. It is injury upon injury. And I think the grief I'm talking about is not the world's response. I'm talking about the church's response.
Okay.
That's the lament is, God, what is it going to take for churches to understand part of the body is hurting, and we need everybody to rush to the wound. Not because we want to fester and sit in it, but because we want to move forward.
We want to heal.
And authentic, yes. And real. You know, but I will say, seeing the marches, my son and I went to a protest in our neighborhood, actually, that was put on by high school students. High school students, Havila, it just brings tears to my eyes when I think of that moment of just this sweet girl, Lauren. She's a sophomore at our local high school, and she put on this rally in our predominantly white neighborhood in North Dallas, in the suburbs. And adults tried to fear monger her. They tried to threaten her. They tried all kinds of, they said Antifa's going to show up and cops are going to get, they tried everything they could to dissuade this young woman. And she said, nope, wow. I'm going to stand to my full stature. I'm going to be tenacious. And over 300 people showed up of all colors, all races, all ages. I can't be hopeless in that kind of environment because I see God moving. I see his heart represented. You know, I marched out there with my son, and I just wanted us to be a part of something more than posting and Blackout Tuesday and all that, right? And calling my congressman and, of course, voting. This is the first election I get to vote because I became a U.S. citizen 2 years
ago. Love it.
And I just thought to myself, how can I be hopeless? Number one, my name is written in the Lamb's Book of Life. Like, we're going to heaven, right? So everything else is cherry on the cake. You know what I mean? It's like, hey, the Lamb is still on the throne. What do I know? In these moments, you have to go back to, what do I know for sure? Jesus loves me. This I know.
What do I know
the
for
Bible
sure?
Bible tells me so. Okay. You know, so besides that, it really is an issue of, for me, honestly, I've been asking God to search my heart of how I can be a bridge builder. Because I think, not having grown up in this country and having the perspective that I do, hopefully disarms people a little bit for me to say, hey, I thought what you probably thought at a time. Like, this is race baiting and this is virtue signaling and all. It's not that. This system is demonic. It's diabolical.
Yeah, it is.
Ever since the enemy's three words in the garden that was the final death blow, did God really say? Once that entered the conversation, this is the fruit.
That was
the seed. This is the fruit of it. This was God's original intent. And this is not his preferred future for us. So
given that,
I can search for justice on this side of eternity because that's his heart, right?
I love that.
It doesn't have to be either or. It doesn't have to be black lives or blue lives. It's both. I don't have to be social justice or evangelist. I can be both. I'm not going to buy into the false dichotomy that the enemy and whoever else is trying to feed us. You don't That's have right. to pick sides.
No.
You can be for all of it in your fullest sense. So I think, if anything, Havla, I'm more encouraged and more emboldened to speak the truth, to be honest, because I feel like I've built a bridge of love enough that can handle the weight of truth now. Now I'm like, all right, guys, this is what's up.
And I can hear that from you. Yes. I can hear both. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like I can hear when you're talking, I'm like, I can hear the sadness and I can hear the hope, and they can simultaneously happen at the same time.
It's a tension that we navigate. Because I think sometimes guilt and the shame can be like a paralytic. It just makes you not do anything. And that's the one thing that you don't want to do, is not do anything. So I would say a good place to start for a lot of people, like I said, is just having those private conversations. And if you want to resource yourself, there's tons of resources out there. But honestly, as Christians,
yeah,
if you see images of protests or things people say, and you just see images of what the Black community is going through, and you feel anything other than mercy and empathy in your heart, that's where you start.
That's right.
So if somebody's acting out because they're traumatized and in pain, like our children, we don't castigate them. We ask them, what's hurt you? What's going on, right? That's called trauma-informed care. So that's what we're needing as a community. Certainly what we need in the church is those conversations of who hurt you or what happened, not don't do that. Don't do it this way. Don't do it that way. That's not helpful. Again, because we're traumatized. So in my community, I'm seeing a lot of pain. But I'm also seeing a lot of conversations happening. I've had conversations.
Yeah, what do you think about that? Is that encouraging that people are talking about it and that it's around? Obviously, it's probably emotionally draining, but is it good debt? Meaning, it's emotional because you're constantly trying to educate people that don't get it. That's what I would feel like. I'm talking to people that haven't had a C-section over and over. Like, I love you, but I'm recovering. Again, that's very trite for what I'm saying. You're trying to explain. So I was really eye-opening. One of the things somebody had said, which I was like, oh my gosh, I have been guilty of this and I didn't understand this. It is not the Black, African, people of color community to educate us on how to be kind.
Right.
That is not our, just like we don't say, what's it like living in America? You don't say to us, what's it like teaching your kids not to hurt us? You guys don't do that to us, and we don't do it to you.
Right.
So does that make sense? There's this lack of
It does make sense. It's like if someone close to you lost their spouse or a child, you would never go to them while they're grieving and say, hey, can you tell me how I can be here for you better?
Yes.
No, you'd just be there. You'd bring a casserole, bring some carbs, and just sit with them. And be like, even if you see something like, I don't even know what to say. I'm just sorry this is happening. That's all part of trauma-informed care. Yeah,
okay.
I'm here for you. Right. But beyond that, for people who are willing, and I think part of the thing of this also is to go slow and not get overwhelmed, because that can happen too.
Tell me more about that. What does that mean?
So once I started reading about the history of this country, I got super overwhelmed with, number one, I cannot believe this has happened on our watch.
Yeah.
And then also, what can I do? Like, I'm one person. I cannot change an entire system that's been in place for decades. That sense of this overwhelming, just injustice, the overwhelming sense of injustice. It just, if your heart is for the Lord, there's no way this doesn't break your heart. No way you don't weep with just, God, this is not right. So there's that. So I would just say people, a couple of books that are helpful, because I really do like to be practical at the end of the day.
Yeah, tell us.
They're written from a biblical worldview, and one of them is The Myth of Equality. And the second one that I would really recommend people starting with is The Color of Compromise. It's by Jamar Tisby, and it is just a phenomenal roadmap for where the church has been complicit in this. Because I think most of our viewers, that's where they want to start.
We do.
We're Christians. We don't have to start from the very beginning here. We're Christians. We're side by side. We're brothers and sisters. And just the power differential
in America between the communities is something that people just need to understand the context, the larger, broader context, the broader narrative of this, because it puts things in perspective. Okay. You can zoom out a little bit from the black and blue and da 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 da, and just as a human being. What is my stance and where do I start? So resourcing yourself is important. There's a couple of documentaries that are really great. 13th on Netflix. It's deep.
Yeah, I've been hearing about that. It's worth watching.
First before watching it with kids because it's heavy.
Okay.
There's a lot of kids books for children, young children.
I know. Lots of good
stuff.
It's
phenomenal, you know. I think the most impactful thing, if I'm honest, Havla, is just having a conversation with somebody one-on-one. And there you can get out all the awkward questions. There you can be like, I don't even know if this is the right thing to say. Do that, right? Like,
but it's not, but Marcy, and I'm trying to be weird, but that's not offensive. It's like, because we're trying to be, like, I'm trying to be, so that's the weird part, right?
About yeah, it's awkward.
Fear sure. And sure. It's, so you want, like, so, you know, I was walking through the airport the other day, and every person that had darker, I wanted to just hug them. I wanted to be able to be like, I love you. I'm with you. What do you need? And I just felt myself be overly just aggressive towards them, like a love where they're like, could you back away?
Oh,
like,
I love you so hard. You can't stand it. Yeah.
I literally was like, I could feel myself wanting to run around, but then I'd ask myself, is that about me? That's about me. That's not even about them. That right. Desire to just get to them is not, it's not, I need to learn. Does that make sense? Like, I don't want to jump into trying to solve something. But sure. I don't want to do that. Is that?
Sure. Yeah, because we kind of want it to be neat and we need closure and we want to just tie it up with a nice neat bow because I'm like that too. I want to fix it and let's move on and then it's good. But that's not what this is. This is going to be lots of baby steps. Baby steps can be awkward and you can fall sometimes, but eventually you move from one stage to the next. And that's what it's going to be because it took us 400 years to get here. So now that we're here, of course, God is going to accelerate the healing because everything's accelerated in these end times because it is what it is.
Yeah.
I believe he's going to do that prophetically for the church, that it's not going to take us 400 years to get to where we need to get to. No, this could change in a generation. This could change by this next generation.
I believe that.
Well, we have got to catch on to the momentum that God has already set us up for a win here. He's already exposed, right? Because imagine all the things that haven't been caught on video.
I know.
This video was very important because it forced everyone to see evidence that demanded a verdict. It was, you cannot look away. The COVID-19 situation forced us all to be home, all the distractions taken away. Mm-hmm. So we didn't have anything to distract us or numb us or busyness to distract. You know, we didn't have that. Yep. So I think the Lord has set us up in such a way that we have to look at this, even though even though it's broken. It's like Ezekiel in the Valley of Bones, right? He's like, hey, look at these bones. It looks really rough right now.
Yeah.
But eventually there's going to come a point where there's going to be muscle and sinew, and then my breath will be put inside them. And it's interesting that those were the words of that. George Floyd was, I can't breathe. There's something about that
breath. Breath and life.
And life, you know? And so
it's something you're saying that's really interesting, not to interrupt you, but that I'd done some research on when people are in trauma and they can't see their future and they need someone to sit with them and paint the picture of what future could look like for them. And then their neural pathways begin to create that pathway with it. But you can't look at somebody and say, have a future and hope and be excited if they don't have those neural pathways that are positive and futuristic and hopeful. And I think that's what the Holy Spirit does to us is when we feel so stuck and we don't know where to go, the Holy Spirit's like, let me show you a future and a hope. I think what's happening, what you're kind of alluding to, is there's a lot of storylines that we don't know where to go from here because it feels so painful and overwhelming and what do we do?
Yeah.
But you're saying, let's think about a future that could be brighter and better than we've ever had and could get rid of all, not get rid, not to dismiss that it's happened, but to remedy and heal.
Yeah.
Let's imagine that. And I don't know if we have that narrative yet, but that's something that's really interesting because I don't know if people know what, like, just that whole concept. And I want to make sure I'll tell our community this. I'm going to write down all these books. I'll throw it on all of our highlights. I'll make sure everybody gets these books and lets them know where to get it and what to read. But what you're saying is imagine a future That's better. I don't think we're hitting it from that level at all.
I mean, that's the only thing that's given me hope. That non-linear is what I call non-linear theology.
I love that. Non-linear theology.
Because Jesus did that. He's like, there's going to be a time. I'm going to prepare a place for you. He didn't say, I'm going to save you from all your past. Of course he does that. But we didn't focus on that. And that's not where we're ending. We're now moving forward to, there's going to be a place where there's no more tears and no more sorrow. Oh my gosh. Now that I know that, I'm working from a space that's so much more productive because I'm not untangling my past constantly trying to figure out what happened, what went wrong, but rather I'm thinking, what is my preferred future going to look like
in Christ? Future.
You know, what is our preferred future going to look like for the church after this is all said and done? I pray that this is not just something that happens and it's a blip on our radar spiritually. I really hope that there's true repentance and true.
Me too.
You know, like we have to be better.
I do.
After this. Like we have
sobriety
to be better after
and
this.
Change.
Yes.
We do. Because if we don't, I don't think we can really live out the gospel.
How can we? We're saying we're going to go out there when in here.
We're not okay.
We're not okay.
And we're going to send people to mission fields, and we're going to send people, we're going to send money other places, but we have people in our own community that need us and need our voice and need our love
and our hurt. And again, I really want your community to understand, I didn't grow up in this country, so I'm not an expert on this. I'm just sharing from my lived experience and from my space as a psych mental health
professional. Which I love.
Which I never, you know what's so crazy, I never knew how God was going to intersect my faith with my profession until now. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is like exactly legit. Like those two things have intersected in the most beautiful of ways. And of course, I know this makes people uncomfortable. I want to acknowledge that. I acknowledge your discomfort. And what I want to say to you is if you're uncomfortable, it's okay. That's why the Holy Spirit is the comforter. I'm not the comforter. My job is to be who God's called me to be and speak truth to power the best I can in the spaces that he's entrusted to me. But the Holy Spirit can do so much in these spaces. If you're uncomfortable with hearing white privilege, if you're uncomfortable with hearing black life, if you're uncomfortable with all, that's okay. That's a great place to start. If you weren't uncomfortable, I'd be concerned, actually. Like, are you numb? Are you alive? Like, because it is uncomfortable, you know. It is when you realize, oh my goodness, there's a whole thing that's been going on that I didn't know or ignore.
I'm serving the system. I'm serving it.
I serve the system.
Mm-hmm. I think so. I really do, Mercy. And I am so grateful that you would come on here and have a conversation about this, because I think, you know, you don't owe us that. And so I'm so grateful that you would help us learn. Also give our community that need this, your voice to speak for on their behalf, to give them that as well. And, you know, we're going to learn together. And I think at Truth at Table, I'm not going to dismiss this. My dad has been a part of leading the MLK marches and has been a part of racial reconciliation for 10 years in the Sacramento region. It is his passion. I've been around this narrative for many, many, many years. I understand that it's taken 10 years. They sit at tables, but it's not over. It's not just one and done. Yeah. This is a listening ear to sit at a table and hear someone else's experience and not to write them off and not to judge it and to realize that it has served you and to be okay with not a conclusion other than I hear you, I love you, and I'm with you.
That is
so
huge.
I think so. And Mercy, I just want you to know, as we get going and we will have more conversations. I hope that you'll do this again with me, because I want our podcast to hear this. I want other people to hear this conversation. But I just, anything you can give us or, you know, whatever you, as we get going and you want to text me, just tell me what you know, anything I can do to serve this part of our story and our generation. I am very hopeful. I think pain is the only way we change often if we don't have enough motivation. So and right now we don't have enough motivation to change without pain. So we have to experience pain to change. And we are listening. I am listening. I just want you to know that I'm listening. And if you only get one person a day that says I'm listening, it's me. I'm listening. And I want our community to listen.
Thank you so much. Thank you. You know what, I'm so grateful that we had this conversation. It actually helped me understand you a little better too, to be honest, because it's hard sometimes to see where people are at from a distance.
It is.
Especially with something that's so divisive and so polarized, for better or for worse. And just it's refreshing to just hear you say, I'm listening.
I am.
Honestly, those are powerful words. That's what Jesus did when he was on the road to Emmaus with those two men. He just listened to them, and they opened the scriptures together, and for 7 miles, he listened, you know, and I think that's just so powerful. It's just such a great example to us of what it looks like for us moving forward in hope and expectation of coming good, is that we can listen better to one another.
I do too.
And it's gonna only help us reflect the kingdom of God better, honestly. At the end of the day, that's, I think, what the Lord is moving us toward. This is not an issue of trying to change the entire world in one day. We're not going to do that. What we are going to do is change the space that we've been given. And we're not going to tolerate any longer certain things. We're not going to tolerate racism. We're not going to tolerate systemic things.
That's
right. We're going to call them out now. We're going to hold people accountable.
We are.
Our police reform, you know, the power differential plus lethal force is a bias that equals death. There are biases that don't equal death. However, and with our police system, the way it is, biases are leading to death. And so we have to stop that. It's one of those things of just, it's a human rights thing. We just need it to not do that anymore.
That's right.
I think us holding our congressmen and people that we've elected, being a part of the electoral process is very important. Not just the presidential election, the local elections, district attorneys. If you've noticed, district attorneys have had a lot of pull and clout of late. And so who are we electing to those positions? And we need to be prayerful about those things, you know? So I think even for me, it's opened my eyes to just being a part of change in different ways than I have in the past. You know? And all of it, Havilah, is moving us closer to looking like what his bride should look like without spot or wrinkle.
You know?
And so,
I feel so sober right now. I feel, like I said, I feel brokenhearted, but not for myself. Just like, it makes me just feel like, you know, like you're watching somebody go through something horrific and you're trying to absorb the little bit of what it might be like.
Yeah.
And I feel sober. And I hope our community does too. I really do. I hope we're not quick to move on. I know that it's controversial in some ways. I don't understand the controversial part of somebody having the right to be safe.
Right.
I don't think that's controversial. I think some people, we get into the whole political, like you said, and the narrative of where the money's going and where and all of that's a distraction to the narrative that needs to be right now, which is that our brothers and sisters, their Black lives matter and need to be seen. And we need to stop being, all the other stuff is a distraction to getting rid of the a part of us that needs to identify that we haven't done that.
Right.
And I think people love to say, well, it's this and it's that. And what about this? And I don't know if I believe that. Stop. That is secondary to what our brothers and sisters are asking us to acknowledge. That's what I'm hearing. That's what at least I'm hearing. Again, I don't know, but
you're hearing absolutely
that's what
right.
I'm hearing.
Absolutely right.
Yeah. And so let's sit there.
Right. Yeah. Let's
we're one
there.
Body. Let's just sit there and stop moving on and stop trying to put it into a pretty moment. It's not pretty. That's the reason we're here, is because we tried to keep it pretty.
Exactly. Exactly.
So yeah.
Like you said, we can do hard things.
We can do this.
Philippians 4:13. We can
suck
do
it up. That's right. And Americans, I love us as Americans. I know we have a lot of different, we'll have Australians and English and you guys and Canadians, and you guys are awesome. And I'm just talking to us as Americans. We need to stop acting like we don't have problems and that we're not biased and there aren't, you know, or that was so long ago. It wasn't long ago. And these are our kids. These are our brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, and parents. And that is enough to keep us awake. So I'm with you. I love you. I love you, Mercy.
Thank you so much, I'm so honored
for your time. Oh, and I can't believe it. I just watched your stories of your little girl, and I can't believe you have this baby.
But I know.
Ultimately, I will. I'll be in touch. I want our community to talk about this. And as we get going, if and when you have the availability, I think another conversation is in order.
I would love to. It's my joy to be able to bring maybe a different perspective that someone hasn't thought about earlier, you know? Maybe just a different viewpoint. Maybe just something you hadn't considered earlier, you know? And just
hey, let's just have a conversation. I'm not coming to you as an expert. I'm coming to you as a sister and just saying,
no,
we're hurting.
And thank you for your kindness.
Yeah.
I can hear the kindness in your voice, and I can hear the compassion, the desire to help us.
Yes.
Not just educate, but to be with us. And I appreciate that. We don't deserve that. So I love that. So Mercy, thank you so much. Give those kids a big hug and a kiss, and we will connect later for sure.
Thank you for listening. We hope you feel encouraged and empowered. Wasn't that conversation amazing? Just a reminder, this was a conversation from our Truth Academy. If you love this talk, our Truth Academy offers incredible content like this. Once a month, Havlet interviews an expert in their field that goes along with the study of the month. Normally, enrollment for Truth Academy only opens once or twice a year, but we are opening right now for the women who are committed to putting the work in to see their lives transformed, see their spiritual life awakened, and be surrounded by like-minded women running after the same thing. Does that sound like you? If so, enroll at truthtotable.com/academy.